Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there. Good afternoon. This is Getting It Done, and I'm your host, Dr. Walter Dean. Broadcasting from South Carolina, we have been looking and listening to this historical greats for the last month and a half. Today, we will once again look at someone who was not from this country, but from Europe, who, of course, had a major impact on what happened in society. I'm speaking of none other than Nostradamus, the person who was able to see the future and write about it, and actually write about what he saw. We may not be able to complete everything about this particular program called Nostradamus Decoded, but if we don't, we'll have to tune in again till Monday for the finalization of it. Let's begin.
Millions believe Nostradamus saw the future. And that future looks grim. We are now living in the age of the third Antichrist. Now the words of Nostradamus are put to a forensic test. Why didn't anybody see 911 before it happened? There were a lot of us warning this was coming.
What he's seeing there is a global disaster of such magnitude that it could only happen in our time.
What did he really write? For the first time in 500 years, we open the book on the real prophet, Nostradamus, Decoded.
At 45 degrees, the sky will burn. Fire to approach the great new city. In an instant, a great scattered flame will leap up when no one will want to demand proof of the Normans.
This simple four-line verse, known as a quatrain, gave a new audience a new reason to believe in the power of prediction. Written by Nostradamus 500 years ago, it gained worldwide notoriety in 2001 as a seeming prediction of the World Trade Center attack. But was it? This tattered manuscript might hold the answers. This is the earliest known copy of Nostradamus' predictive writings. Written and published in the mid-16th century, this pamphlet was an immediate popular sensation. It has been translated and interpreted by an entire industry devoted as much to profit as prophecy. But because of the difficulty of the original language, rarely do scholars go back to the first texts.
Nostradamus wrote in a way that left as much unsaid as said. And so each person can interpret Nostradamus how one wishes.
The now cliched images of Nostradamus that have passed through the ages are of a gifted seer peering into a pool of water. Like the ancient Greek oracles at Delphi. He wrote about it himself, creating his own hype in quatrain form.
Sitting by night in my secret study, alone, resting upon the stool of brass, a slight flame going out of the solitude makes me pronounce what is not to be believed vain. In fear, I write, trembling in the sleeves, the divine, seated nearby.
But Nostradamus was not a mere soothsayer. He was a learned man who commanded respect.
I think a plausible scenario presents itself with Nostradamus, that he's a physician, an astrologer, a reasonably well-educated man. So he starts off writing the kind of stuff that anybody in his position might write. He finds that as he pushes the boundaries a little bit more, into more of this sort of astrological, forecasting, prophetic predictions and so on, he draws more attention to himself. He gets more positive feedback. Maybe he even makes, you know, a little more money. I don't think it's like this conscious thing, I'm going to scam people, or I'm born a prophet, I shall set out to do this. I don't think either of those is right. I think it's a gradual, slow learning process, and you end up where you ended up.
Then, as now, image is everything. And one prediction by Nostradamus did come undeniably true.
As time elapses after my death, my writings will have more weight than during my lifetime.
His work and this popular image would survive for centuries. But how did it happen? His secretary, Jean de Chevigny, was first to help make this so. A doctor in his own right, Chevigny left his pursuit of medicine to devote his life to the work of Nostradamus, whom he claimed even predicted his own death.
He apparently told the secretary the day before that he wouldn't make it till the morning. And he was found halfway between his bed and his writing desk, as if he were on his way to write some final prophecy or make some note on his will. It's a good bet that if there hadn't been Chevigny putting out versions of the prophecies and writing interpretations of them in the 20 or 30 years after Nostradamus' death, that he would have sunk completely into obscurity.
Nostradamus was always something of an outsider. Just before he was born, the church cast its long shadow over his Jewish family. In 1496, a new edict forced them to convert to Christianity or be expelled from France, or worse. Instead, Michel de Nostradamus was the first child in the family to be baptized in a Catholic faith.
One of the things that we have, through popular culture, believed with Nostradamus is that he just spent his whole life up in some room somewhere making prophecies. But Nostradamus was a Renaissance man in the true sense of the word. He was an apothecary. He was a physician.
It was a time when the human intellect began to look for rational, not religious, explanation for the mysteries of the universe. Nostradamus was a maverick as a medical student at the University of Montpellier, pushing the boundaries of accepted scientific practice.
He was expelled because there were complaints about him as a druggist. He was working on certain types of medicine on his own, which was something that he was not supposed to do as a doctor.
Nostradamus was not a man willing to sit on the sidelines. When the plague devastated France, he became famous for braving the ravaged villages that other doctors left for dead.
The plague was a shadow that followed him all through his life. It was also a challenge.
Even as he battled the hellish conditions, there was worse in store for him.
He had a great tragedy in his life where the famous plague doctor could not save his wife and his two young children. And for 6 years, he drops out of the history.
Why did Nostradamus become a prophet? I think it was probably as a result of the trauma he suffered with the loss of his first wife and his children. And he then went on a long pilgrimage through Italy, Spain. He walked all over the place, saw many things. I think during that period, he changed.
Nostradamus lived in a world that was falling apart. A bloody civil war, religious schisms, and foreign invaders made the future look very dark. As the world changed around him, Nostradamus turned inward and created the poetry of prediction, the legendary quatrains.
I think he wrote all the quatrains very quick. All 1,000 of them came out within about 4 years, so that's quite a few a day. I mean, that's a lot of work.
Nostradamus settled in the tiny village of Salon, where he began his writing career. He was able to make use of the relatively new invention, the printing press. And this translated into an entirely new cultural phenomenon, the bestseller.
We are in the historic part of Salon. This is the part of town where Nostradamus lived.
These are the streets he walked, and we are right now in front of his house. This is where he settled in 1547 when he married Anne Ponsard. This is where his six children were born and lived. This is also the place where he wrote all his major works from 1549 until his death in 1566.
Nostradamus knew what people wanted. His first book was a popular cosmetics guide and cookbook. Then he hit on a winning combination.
He realized that there was a large market in doing almanacs, and if the almanacs had plenty of rather vague and rather entertaining sounding predictions in them, then they would sell better. So this was a very popular idea. Nostradamus jumped into it with both feet.
The almanacs employed basic astronomy, predicting the hours of daylight, the weather, and the planting calendars. But he drew on all his skills and added a touch of astrology.
In 16th century Europe, they didn't have anything like the distinctive divisions and fields like we have, astronomy versus astrology, chemistry versus alchemy. These were all just blended into what was called natural philosophy. Therefore, he had all the tools, the intellectual tools, and the cultural context to do what he did, better than most other people.
Thomas put his classical education to good use, peppering his writing with dark allusions, cryptic symbolism, and a heavy dose of doom and gloom.
What he did was he added the idea of adding a little prophecy to it, jazzing it up, as it were, talking about two-headed monsters and what they might mean. And this gave everybody a little bit of excitement.
It was the ultimate sales formula. Poems laced with astrology, with carefully constructed language that implied a look into the future. It was a formula for success.
In the 16th century, we had the printing press, but still, not everything was written down. If you put it in verse, you can memorize it so much more effectively, and it has a kind of rhythmic effect on the mind, and it becomes more compelling as well.
Even more compelling was the fact that some of his quatrains seemed to come true in his lifetime. And as the centuries passed, it became apparent to many who studied the mysterious quatrains that Nostradamus had drawn a roadmap for the future. And this future, he'd seen, was going to be a dangerous place. Napoleon. Hitler. The murder of JFK. And what even bigger events to come? A time of troubles. An antichrist to usher them in. What did Nostradamus really say? And can we decode his true meaning before it is too late? He is the most famous prophet in history. He has warned of war, famine, disease, and worse. Many argue he foretold nearly every major event that has shaped our world today. And there are still many more predictions to come. His name, Michel Nostradamus. And he lived in 16th century France.
I would say he is remarkable. And that some quatrains are so stunningly accurate and so prescient that one really can't avoid accepting that he really had some great gift.
Was Nostradamus sending a dire message to the future? And is that future now? While Nostradamus's fame reaches every corner of the world, it is here in southern France that his legacy truly lives on. The 16th century is still visible in the streets that Nostradamus once walked. The rooms where he lived and made his predictions still exist. And in the city of Lyon, so do his original works. This rare book is one of a handful of surviving first editions of Nostradamus' prophecies. Although there have been countless translations, This is as close to the source as it's possible to get. No handwritten manuscripts exist. With no preconceptions or agenda, Professor Douglas Kibbe, a scholar and translator of 16th century French, is going to start at the beginning, retranslating some of Nostradamus' most disturbing quatrains from the original text. Did Nostradamus write what people think he wrote, or has time warped his original meaning? The quatrains are written in groups of up to 100, each known as a century. There are 10 known centuries, though only the first 7 were published during Nostradamus' lifetime. Professor Kibbe meets with Michel Chaumerat, the premier Nostradamus expert in the world. He possesses some of the last remaining original works of Nostradamus, works that will prove invaluable if the quatrains are to be properly translated.
He has his own personal collection of hundreds, probably thousands of documents. He has organized major exhibits of the legacy of Nostradamus, if you will, how Nostradamus has been interpreted all around the world.
Professor Kibbe is invited into the closely guarded antiquities section of the Lyon Library to study Nostradamus' work.
This is the first almanac produced by Nostradamus for the year 1555. So this is a book that has the same year then as his first publication of the centuries. And it has here sort of season by season predictions, and then at the end it's month by month with one quatrain for each month.
Perhaps the rarest item in the library includes Nostradamus' actual handwriting.
It says, all adulterous women are full of venom. That's the literal translation, or another possible translation, because all adulterous women are full of venom, or because all adulterous women are witches.
Even a note scrawled in the margin has various meanings, showing how hard it will be to penetrate the true intent behind every line. Michel Chaumerat invites Dr. Kibbe to an even more secure location to see his prized possession, the oldest known edition of the complete 10 centuries.
The book is a very small format, sort of pocketbook kind of format. And surprisingly, as you say, for a book that has such importance in the history of the West, that it would be such a tiny book, but it was meant to be sold. It would be the equivalent of selling books at the airport or the checkout counter at the supermarket.
Despite Dr. Kibbe's fluency in Old French, the quatrains are not an easy read.
The translation of the quatrain is extremely difficult because there are many things he leaves unsaid.
His obscurity was most likely by design to avoid the attention of the Inquisition.
The alchemist of the 16th century didn't write anything straight out. They had an occult language known as the green language. And the green language is a system of being able to say things by means of not necessarily codes, but different meanings in different languages, spelling words differently, anagrams, ellipses, abbreviations.
But Nostradamus really is a product of his own time in that sense that the printing press, the Protestant Reformation, the every man his own priest, anybody can interpret the ancient secret texts, and that's a very dangerous thing for people in power to allow to happen. So the Inquisition, in part, was a way of controlling information. That's why, in part, I think Nostradamus is perhaps writing in the kind of obscure language he was to protect himself.
There are many people that have been trying to decide that Nostradamus had some all-encompassing Da Vinci code-like code in his works. Nostradamus's codes are random, and you have to kind of get into the chaotic flow, kind of in a Nietzschean research. Out of this chaos, there are stars of prophecy that are born.
The search for hidden meanings in Nostradamus's prophecies has lasted for hundreds of years, and it continues today with new urgency.
And the question is whether the translator has caught the spirit of the person who wrote the original one or has not.
But what was Nostradamus trying to hide within his verse? His followers believe they see dire warnings woven into his words. That the third Antichrist will rise in our lifetime. Could the mystery of Nostradamus' prophecies be unlocked to avoid catastrophe on a global scale? Did Nostradamus really predict the future, or did he merely understand that in times of turmoil, people's uncertainty could be tapped? Much of the appeal of Nostradamus' prophecies is the heavy dose of doom and gloom, but he lived in perilous times. In order to understand the deeper meaning of the quatrains, we need to start at the beginning, when Nostradamus' words were first written.
In his own time, he was very popular because he was a bridge between the classical learning that everyone respected but few people had access to, and he would popularize it.
There was a universal quality to his quatrains. They were read by commoners and royalty alike. They even caught the attention of Catherine de' Medici, the Queen of France and the most powerful woman in Europe. Once she was won over, Nostradamus' status was ensured.
She's probably the first person to read the famous prophecy, the 35th verse of Century 1, the first volume, that alludes to something that sounds like the death of her husband, King Henry II of France.
The young lion shall overcome the old one on the field of war in a single combat. He will put out his eyes in a cage of gold. Two fleets won. Then he dies a cruel death.
She saw this as a threat in the future, and she convinced her husband, reluctantly, to summon this Nostradamus fellow up to Paris, and we'll have an audience with him.
Nostradamus' quatrain was a bold gamble, for the 16th century was a time when you could be killed for less than talking about the death of a king.
He was very careful to only use classical models, because the last thing he wanted, and this really would have brought the Inquisition down on him, was a direct accusation of magic, of witchcraft. So he was very careful to say, okay, I'm doing the same thing that the Delphic Oracle did.
I think Nostradamus' prophecies have been perceived as a dangerous book ever since they were published.
In the summer of 1555, Nostradamus is summoned to the royal court and makes the month-long journey from Salon to Paris.
A merchant in Lyon met Nostradamus as he was going up to the French court. He noted in his diary that Nostradamus was very much afraid of going to Paris, and he feared that his head might be cut before August 25th.
Now, politics at this particular midpoint of the 16th century in France was probably more complicated than anything before, and certainly more complicated than anything that came after up until the Revolution. And there were factions within the royal family over who should succeed, who should be in charge. So there were all of this political turmoil. What Catherine de' Medici realized was that Nostradamus, by being completely out of the loop, here he is in southern France, he's a plague doctor, he's writing these amazing prophecies in the almanacs that seem to speak directly to her, that this was not political. There was no way that Nostradamus was trying to push a political agenda. He just simply was what he was.
Whether or not he was a prophet, Nostradamus is a great student of the human psyche. When the queen asks of the fate of her family, he casts overly optimistic horoscopes for her sons and their future prospects, and it saves his life.
As he used to say, if I were to tell people my time how different the future would be, they would damn the future. So he had an obligation not to make people damn the future, so he cooked it a little bit.
Not all prophecy focuses on doom and gloom, but the horoscope, the way to sell it, is you want that person to walk away happy.
satisfied. And they're going to be happy and satisfied if you tell them what they want to hear.
His favorable outlook for the Queen and her family won Nostradamus Catherine's patronage and affection. It was a huge coup for the man and his career. They were joined by destiny again 4 years later, and by the dark prediction that had first drawn them together.
The young lion shall overcome the old one on the field of war in a single combat.
The quatrain underscored his fame by a prediction that seemed to come true. It happened in the summer of 1559. The King of France hosts the weddings of both his daughter and his sister.
So there was a giant tournament to celebrate the two marriages. And at this tournament, Henry II decided that he wanted to show off his prowess as a warrior. So he challenged to single combat the Count of Montgomery, who was a famous warrior at the time. He and Montgomery fight a joust with blunted lances, but Montgomery's lance breaks. And the point of Montgomery's broken lance goes into the eye slit of Henry II's helmet and penetrates his eye. 10 days later, after unspeakable agonies, Henry dies.
Everyone, even Montgomery, whose misfortune was to have killed the king, credited Nostradamus with having predicted it, though the wording could easily be read in many ways.
He will put out his eyes in a cage of gold, two fleets won, then he dies a cruel death.
This prophecy is filled with interesting circumstantial or literal evidence that you have the young lion, the old lion, in the first line. They both, it is said, had lion-embossed shields. The Count Montgomery, who went against the king, was several years younger than the king. Young lion, old lion.
Though Henry's tournament may qualify as single combat, could the jousting arena be called a field of war?
If you interpret on a field of war to indicate that the two huge armies and that these are the heroes going out before to do single combat, then it doesn't quite match. However, it was on the Champ de Mars in Paris, which is the field of wars. So it's a direct reference to the place that it happened.
What mattered most was that the queen herself believed Nostradamus had seen her husband's fate. More than any of the 30,000 astrologers who lived in Paris, he became her anointed favorite. Nostradamus's time had now come, but in spite of his popularity, Nostradamus was not immune to criticism.
This book is an attack on Nostradamus, believed to be by a Protestant who believed that Nostradamus was too favorable to Catholics. And in the book, in the title here, Nostradamus is called Monstradamus, that is, Monster Demos. It's published in 1558, just as France was getting ready to be torn apart by the wars of religion.
Though some may have tried to diminish him, Nostradamus had the power of his words. He continues to gain popularity as history appears to play out from his quatrains. Could they all be coming true in his life and beyond? A foretell, a violent battle between Muslims and Christians. A raging fire that would burn London to the ground. And an apocalyptic war and religious conflict in our own century that threatens our very existence. The answers are in the words, and those secrets need to be decoded.
Cinquième quatrain de la première centurie. Le lion jeune, levé sur mon thorax, enchambéli par singulier duel.
The words of Nostradamus have been interpreted over and over for nearly 500 years. Particularly because many suspect he may have been lacing his prophecies with hidden meanings.
And remember, there are very nearly 1,000 quatrains, so the chances of getting all those right are infinitesimal. The fact that so many seem to hit their target is, I think, what's impressive about Nostradamus.
I'm here being interviewed four and a half centuries later, the end of a long line of interpreters who started with Chauvigny. He was the first to try to interpret the meaning of Nostradamus' prophecies.
To understand Nostradamus, we must go to his roots. He wrote his prophecies in Salon de Provence, a town not far from his Saint-Rémy birthplace.
The plague took his first family in Agen, which triggered his wandering and his spiritual quest. When he resurfaces again 6 years later, he's fighting the plague in Marseille and famously fighting the plague in Aix-en-Provence. It's because of the plague that he went to Salon, where he met his second wife.
In the south, where Nostradamus grew up, in Provence, they viewed the northern French as the French. They didn't even view themselves as French. They were Provençal. One has to understand that to really get the gist of what Nostradamus was and where he came from. Provence had been crossed by the Romans, the Greeks, the Moors. Everyone had come across it at some point or another, and they had left vestiges of themselves behind.
The 16th century is still very much alive today, and the town pays homage to its most famous forefather. Nostradamus' home is now a museum that houses a collection of his original works, including all of his quatrains. To help clarify the more controversial prophecies, Dr. Douglas Kibbe, a scholar of 16th century French, is here to investigate the different editions of Nostradamus' work.
This book is exceedingly rare. There are three or four copies of the full 10 centuries. There are other editions that have the same centuries that have been found in other libraries. Every has differences from the others. So the only difference I see is that here Comet has two T's and there it has one.
It's well known that there are dozens of discrepancies between editions. Some of them do change the meaning of the text, the prophet's true intent, a challenge that's been going on for more than five centuries, since Nostradamus was still alive. In 1565, all of Europe was riveted by the news that a small band of Christian knights had defeated an onslaught of tens of thousands of Ottoman Turks at the Isle of Malta, and word spread like wildfire that Nostradamus had predicted it by name.
From the Orient will come the Punic heart to vex Adria and the heir of Romulus. Accompanied by the Libyan fleet, Malta trembling and the neighboring isle empty.
The heirs of Romulus are the Pope in this classical allusion. And the Libyan fleet, of course, is the Turkish fleet that did attack Malta.
The knights saw this as the last battle of the Crusades. The Ottomans arrived in the spring of 1565, well, 50,000 of them, and there were 200 ships, and they attacked the Grand Harbor of Malta.
Despite a massive barrage, the fortress held. Though the quatrain didn't even predict the battle's outcome, much of Europe still hailed Nostradamus' success.
I don't think you have to be Nostradamus to realize that the Ottomans would one day attack the Knights of Malta, because the Knights of Malta were such an irritant to the great Ottoman Empire. What would be surprising is to think that the Ottomans would fail before Malta. That would be a prediction that would establish a lot of credibility.
Yet for those who believe Nostradamus had predicted the death of King Henry, Malta seemed to confirm his gift.
In a way, there's a number of different cognitive fallacies at work in Nostradamus and all kinds of psychic predictions. One is the confirmation bias, where you look for and find confirmatory evidence for what you already believe.
And since people now believed in Nostradamus, they turned to him whenever there was a calamity, and there were plenty to find.
Almost all of his quatrains are negative. There are evil things that are happening, wars, overturning regimes, looks like bloodshed everywhere. The word blood shows up about every third or fourth quatrain. Fire was a major problem because most of the construction was in wood. So whole cities would disappear like Alfonso in the 17th century.
In 1666, a century after Nostradamus' death, The Great Fire of London burnished his fame once more because his followers believed he had seen it 100 years earlier.
The blood of the just will commit a fault at London, birth through lightning of 23, the sixth. The ancient lady will fall from her high place. Several of the same sect will be killed.
We have a date in a typical obscure language fashion, 23-6, etc., which points directly to 1666.
Burnt by lightning fire in 23 the sixes. That has been translated to 66, or sixes in the plural, 666.
With each confirmed prediction, Nostradamus gained more credibility and his quatrains a wider readership. Yet the convoluted poems, full of classical allusions and mythological symbols, may have been leading generations of readers astray. Can our scholar of 16th century French bring new insight to the quatrains? Did Nostradamus really see the events of 9/11? Did he foretell the Antichrist and the end of the world? Of all of Nostradamus' dark visions, one figure stands out, the Antichrist.
One of the reasons for Nostradamus' popularity in his own time period was the apocalyptic culture in which he lived. Everyone was expecting the end of the world tomorrow, if not today.
As plague wrapped the continent, civil wars threatened every crown, and Reformation threatened the one true church. In every corner of life, the status quo was under siege. And this uncertainty pointed straight to the apocalypse.
Nostradamus does mention the Antichrist on several occasions, and at his time, at the time of the Protestant Reformation, it was splitting a united Christendom into many parts. Both sides were claiming that the other was the Antichrist.
To Nostradamus, living in his apocalyptic times, there was enough evil to envision more than just one Antichrist.
There are three Antichrists in Nostradamus' writings. It's unique in prophecy. Everyone else's tradition, including the East and the West, see it as one figure. Nostradamus sees three.
For those who believe Nostradamus, the first of the Antichrists is France's most infamous ruler, Napoleon Bonaparte.
The European royalty, of course, thought of Napoleon as the Antichrist. Napoleon crowning himself emperor. Now, what could be more the Antichrist?
To Nostradamus, with his royalist sympathies, such a move would indeed be monstrous. That's why interpreters insist in this instance, the prophet even had a vision of his name, even if it was in code form.
I believe that a lot of what Nostradamus wrote was commentary about his own time, that he was trying to have some sort of influence on the society in which he lived, rather than predicting the future. But if he said that it was prophecies of the future, he could disguise it.
One of the easiest poetic disguises was use of the anagram.
Ho ne Laurent will be more of fire than blood.
Oleron and Paul and ne. It's anagram. It's in bold letters even. A lot of anagrams Nostradamus doesn't say, look, here it is. You know, he really wanted people to get this one. Napoleon can be easily anagrammed out of Paul and Nailoron.
Nostradamus often, in his quatrains, mentioned the names of cities in the France that he knew. And Po, Ne, and Oloron are three cities in an equilateral triangle on the map of France even today. Now, it's very hard to make Napoleon out of that, but they'll find ways.
The interpretation that this means that Pou, Ne, and Oloron could be transposed to say Napoléon Roi. I put the same letters into an internet
program to see how many combinations it could come up with. And in English, it came up with about 800 combinations of real words, and in French, over 300. There are many ways that this could be interpreted. One is that the anagram is not very close, and Napoleon is not the same thing as Napoléon. But perhaps even more important is that Napoleon wasn't roi, king, he was emperor, empereur. There's nothing else in that quatrain that is particularly Napoleonic.
But this is just one of the references interpreters say point to Napoleon.
An emperor will be born near Italy who will cost the empire dear. When those with whom he allies are spoken of, he will be found to be less prince than butcher.
Napoleon was born in Corsica, which is much closer to Italy than it is to France. And the idea that he will be more butcher than prince, close to a million Frenchmen died in the Napoleonic Wars.
The prophecy that is supposed to apply to Napoleon could also apply to Mussolini when you come right down to it, because they both came from humble backgrounds and they rose to be emperors, literally.
Nostradamus' doom and gloom still rivets our attention, even after five centuries.
If it bleeds, it leads. Well, that's what makes the news. And unfortunately, that's what gets our brains interested.
It makes sense from an evolutionary perspective. Why? From an evolutionary standpoint, there's a lot of survival value to paying attention to the negative. The Nostradamian prophecies, with all their doom and gloom and fear for the future, take advantage of this very human process.
He wrote in a way to get our attention, but what message did the prophet mean to convey with his dark words?
Nostradamus, in fact, as a 16th century humanist, he is generally warning people, if you don't straighten out, then you will bring about bad things. And you can influence your own future and avoid the terrible things that could happen.
To decode the identities of Nostradamus' three antichrists, we must look at how Nostradamus used the past to find the future.
Nostradamus was so much a product of his time that it's almost impossible to separate the man out from the background. That little village he was born in had enormous Roman ruins that were still standing, that sort of spurred him and gave him a sense of history, an idea that there really had been a golden age that maybe we could get back to.
Nostradamus grew up in the shadows of the Roman Empire and its glory. The 2,000-year-old ruins of Les Antiques still stand outside his childhood home of San Remi and are as majestic today as they were 500 years ago.
Nostradamus often came here as a child, and there are several references to these ruins in his works.
He was well-read in history, and history appears a lot in his prophecies.
To Nostradamus, the ruins served both as a reminder that all empires crumble and a warning for the future, a warning that he sought to decipher. He scoured ancient and occult texts in search of answers.
By trying to organize this vast mass of ancient prophetic material, he sort of popularized it. He put it into a form that pretty much anybody who could read French would understand.
Nostradamus shows every indication of having been what I'll call a creative psychic. That is to say, he put his own spin on the material. He didn't just paraphrase his sources.
To avoid the wrath of the Inquisition, Nostradamus was careful to conceal his sources, even destroying the more incriminating ones. Whatever Nostradamus did see, he was careful to disguise. But he was uncharacteristically direct in warning of the three antichrists. Many assert that Nostradamus predicted the second antichrist by name, Adolf Hitler. And more ominously, the third antichrist, also predicted by name, may be walking among us today. Antichrists Nostradamus predicted. Nostradamus's followers say that Napoleon was the first and the second, a name that has come to stand for universal evil. Hitler.
On the meeting, they pay it at that stop it.
Beast wild with hunger will cross the rivers. The greater part of the battle will be against Hister. He will cause great men to be dragged in a cage of iron when the son of Germany obeys no law.
The Hister quatrain of Nostradamus' prophecies has been cited possibly more often than any other as evidence that Nostradamus was predicting the rise of Hitler. Part of the reason is Hister sounds quite a lot like Hitler.
There is the very famous Hister, H-I-S-T-E-R, which he uses, which a lot of commentators, of course, have translated into Hitler. Change a few letters and you have it. Except that Hister is the name of the Danube in Latin.
If you're going to talk about Hitler, just say Hitler. Why use this Hister business, which really meant the lower Danube River? Why would writing about Hitler and the Nazis in the 16th century get you in trouble with the authorities then? It wouldn't.
Who grew up on the banks of the Danube, known as the Hister? Who was born deep in the western half of Europe, called Noricum, Austria, in modern terms? Adolf Hitler was born in the deepest recesses of Western Europe. That means Austria. It means also Austria because it's settled up by the fact that Hister, the ancient name for the Danube, sounds awfully close to Hitler.
The rest of the quatrain also reinforces the Hitler reference.
Great men dragged in cages. The last two lines of that are perhaps the most exact. And that refers, again, Nostradamus was only recently converted from Judaism. So we can see that great men dragged in cages would be that sort of repression, both of intellectuals and of intellectual Jews in Germany. And the wild beast crossing the borders, if you look at the stormtroopers, they are wild beasts. That the Blitzkrieg, et cetera, was some sort of wild attack that swept from Germany across France.
The truth is in the details.
A more literal translation would say something like, most of the army will move up to the Danube. The next line, en cage de fer, le grand fer a traîné. This is one of those intentionally ambiguous passages in Nostradamus, at least I assume intentionally ambiguous. It could be the great man will have someone dragged in an iron cage, a prison cell, or it could be someone unnamed will drag the great man in a prison cell. Either one is a legitimate interpretation. The last line translates as, when the son of Germany obeys no law. There's nothing about law in this. It says the German child will overlook the Rhine. If one wanted to interpret the German child as Hitler, I suppose that would be possible. There have been a lot of German children between 1555 and the present. Could have been any of them, but there's no reason that the proper name that's cited should be interpreted as Hitler.
The Nazis themselves were more than willing to accept the mistranslation that elevated their leader to this mystical status. The Nazi leadership realized early on that prophecy and mysticism could be an effective tool in controlling the German people. And so, in a twist of historic irony, the Nazis exploited the writings of this famous prophet of Jewish ancestry.
Germany in the 1920s and the 1930s was a hotbed of occultism, mystical ideas, astrology, Eastern mysticism. There was all sorts of mystical ideas going on. There was this influence of occultism on the Nazi Party from the very beginning. The entire high command of the Third Reich was heavily involved in all sorts of mystical pursuits. Hitler himself created a kind of environment in Germany that was conducive to all sorts of mysticism. His adoption of the swastika, for instance, as the symbol of the Nazi Party, was the adoption of an occult symbol.
Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels enlists the aid of famed Swiss astrologer Karl Kraft
to decode Nostradamus in their favor. Kraft was eventually incarcerated after making several predictions that didn't suit what the Nazis wanted to hear.
Goebbels had a saying, "I could make a triangle into a square if I could just repeat it enough."
British intelligence takes this threat so seriously that it too invokes Nostradamus in its cause.
The British didn't believe in occultism, but they believed the Germans believed in it.
The British made up new quatrains purportedly written by Nostradamus that hinted at a plot that would kill the Führer.
Hister, who carried off more victories in his warlike fight than was good for him. Six will murder him in the night. Naked, taken unawares, without his armor, he succumbs.
These copies would be dropped into Germany. The effect of that propaganda was to demoralize the German population.
The propaganda war followed Nostradamus' own method. The more negative the prediction, the more readily it was accepted.
We're in a sense tuned to be more interested in negative information. This is why negative campaigning works so well.
Whether or not Nostradamus actually can take claim for Hitler, there are other terrifying 20th century events that do seem to appear in the quatrains. Did Nostradamus actually predict the dropping of the atom bomb?
Near the gates and within two cities, there will be two scourges, the like of which was never seen. Famine within plague, people put out by steel, crying to the great immortal God for relief.
It's quatrain six. On August 6th, Hiroshima was bombed. It's a port. Swivel the 6 around to 9. You get the date for Nagasaki's bombing by the second atomic bomb. It's also a port. Two scourges in two port cities. It's pretty remarkable stuff.
Perhaps nothing is as dangerous as men who decide to fulfill a prophecy, except those who try to create the outcome from scratch. What might happen when other men claim to decode the words of prophets to make an even more terrible prophecy come to pass? The 20th century is seen by believers as the ultimate proving ground for Nostradamus. With two of the Antichrists already supposedly identified and gone, there is yet a final one to be named. Some warn this coming will hearken the end of the world. Others insist this is a tactic for fearmongers to consolidate their power.
Whenever there are times of trouble, economic trouble, social unrest, that's when people turn to prophecy. Why? They're trying to make sense of it. They want to understand what's happening.
Few events have been more unsettling than the ushering in of the atomic era, as the world was suddenly on the brink of annihilation. This new age of darkness has created a new urgency to decode Nostradamus by modern interpreters.
The ancient work will be accomplished, and from the roof, evil ruin will fall on the great man. They will accuse an innocent being dead of the deed. The guilty one is hidden in the misty cups.
On November 22, 1963, the nation was shaken to its core when President Kennedy was assassinated. And, not surprisingly, there again was Nostradamus.
It puts my back hairs to raise when I read that. We all know about Kennedy's assassination. We know that the killing shot apparently came from roof level, from on high, evil will fall on the great man. The man accused of the crime, Lee Harvey Oswald, did not live long enough to testify. A dead innocent will be accused of the deed. The guilty one will remain hidden in the mist. Thanks to Jack Ruby, will always be the case.
There was another prophet who benefited from that terrible moment, Gene Dixon.
Prophets can make their reputation on just one or two successful predictions, even if they have thousands and thousands of false predictions.
what Jean Dixon is noted for is that she supposedly predicted the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And she milked that for all the money she could get, write horoscopes and so forth in every major paper. What did she really predict? First of all, she predicted that Richard M. Nixon would win the 1960s presidency over John F. Kennedy, and that the president would die in office. So what she really predicted was that Dick Nixon would die in office.
People will forget about the ones that miss. The ones that hit, those will stick, and they'll remember them, and they'll repeat them.
People keep saying that Nostradamus had these hits, predicted Hitler, Napoleon, or whatever, and they say them over and over again.
With interpreters stressing successes, believers have a lot invested in making sure the quatrains prove Nostradamus correct. And perhaps no one was as invested in Nostradamus as his disciple, Jean de Chevigny.
He can be considered the first Nostradamian, first Nostradamus disciple, and the very first interpreter of the prophecies.
He was, in a way, the perfect disciple, which means also the worst kind, because the master becomes a god, and whatever he said is right. And if he said the wrong thing, then you correct it.
After Nostradamus' death, Chevigny stepped out of his master's shadow and took control of his work.
Chevigny had such an admiration for Nostradamus that he found it very difficult to accept any form of criticism. But unfortunately, he did perform a certain number of alterations, which are not always very easy to detect.
Chevigny, because he had a financial interest in the publications and a financial interest in Nostradamus being very famous, he improved on some of the prophecies. He actually made interpretations of prophecies that did really exist, and this translated some of the prophecies so they would be closer to what he thought the interpretation would be.
Translating Nostradamus became an art in itself.
If the prophet himself was trying so hard to obscure things, there might be some license to allow others to do the same. Or in his kind of subjective state, he might say, maybe God wants it this way, you know.
Since the final three centuries of quatrains were published after Nostradamus died, determining what was really his has become more difficult.
There are fake editions that are also here, where extra quatrains have been added according to people's interests.
We have two editions here. This small one is a real one, and published in Lyon, 1568. On the other side, we have a counterfeit edition, also published in Lyon, 1568. You can see that the fake one is much bigger than the real one.
I feel that a lot of commentators through the ages, starting with Chevigny down to today, use Nostradamus' text as a pretext. They become prophets in turn. It's no longer Nostradamus predicting, but they are predicting what they see through Nostradamus.
Speculative interpretations of prophecies may seem harmless enough.
The way that it's helped me understand Nostradamus is to flow with the chaos of his dyslexic mind, and in that you get a feeling for the random yet somewhat ordered way in which Nostradamus uses certain anagrams, word plays, phrases, for instance, in the prophecy that talks about the people of the capital will not want him at all. This man called Dubieux, which in French means the doubtful one, but it also illuminates something Nostradamus loved to do. High people in their nicknames. Dubieux, W. Could it be the President of the United States, since capital is only used once in the entire 36,000 words of Nostradamus? You see, here's a nickname that didn't make any sense until 2000. Suddenly, the prophecy makes a lot of sense.
But what's harmless speculation for some could actually become willful manipulation by others. In the case of 9/11, separating the predictions from the hoaxes made the future even harder to foretell. And is 9/11 only the beginning? The 21st century may be the time of his most harrowing predictions. On one of the darkest days in modern history, millions turned to the predictions of Nostradamus and found what they were looking for. What seemed to be his vision of this very moment.
Garden of the world near the new city, in the path of the hollow mountains. It will be seized and plunged into the top, forced to drink waters poisoned by sulfur.
Garden of the world. The Garden State of New Jersey is where one of the jets passed. Its world is in the prophecy to give you an indication of the World Trade Center in the new city. If you were from the 16th century, you might call that a hollow mountain. In the path of the hollow mountain, the plane that hit the South Tower shadowed over a part of the Hudson River where the PATH subway went from New Jersey into the World Trade Center.
The common game that's played with these kind of prophecies is you read the prophecies to go through and figure out what that prophecy say. And once you start to generate your own solutions to it, that's one of the most effective ways to convince anybody of anything. You start to say, well, that must have referred to Hitler, or that's the Great Fire, or that was 9/11, or whatever it is. You break the code, the Nostradamians who promote this stuff help you break that code, and you convince yourself.
Believers point to this second quatrain as an even more graphic warning of 9/11.
Volcanic fire from the center of the earth will cause trembling around the new city. Two great rocks will make war for a long time. Then Arethusa will redden the new river.
Once again, the text seems different than the sensational interpretation.
This is the 87th quatrain of the first century. The Cité Neuve here is a new city, so somebody might interpret that as New York. But much more likely interpretation within Nostradamus' time, the new city is Naples, which is from the Greek words Neapolis, the new city, and the volcano mentioned is Vesuvius, which is not too far away. Well, I don't see any apocalyptic event here. It sounds like a local volcanic eruption to me.
It may be that what Nostradamus actually meant is less important than what people think it means to them.
In a situation like 9/11, people want to go back and want to understand why did that happen. We use naive theories, we turn to authorities like Nostradamus, and we rely on their predictions about the world. And that helps us make sense of where we are.
In the month after 9/11, the hits of anything on any website anywhere had to do with Nostradamus went through the roof. He had never had the kind of worldwide penetration, saturation, overwhelming attention that he got after 9/11.
Just after September 11th, the internet was flooded with the most ominous quatrain ever written.
In the city of God, there will be a great thunder. Two brothers torn apart by chaos. While the fortress endures, the great leader will succumb. The third big war will begin when the big city is burning. Nostradamus, 1654.
With so much uncertainty after 9/11, this quatrain made people believe that World War III had just begun. But it was a hoax, and included a clue to let the reader know it was false. It was dated 1654. How could Nostradamus have written it? He died in 1566.
That hoaxes serve a certain purpose to, I think, teach us a lesson that we're too vulnerable and susceptible to wanting to believe what we already believe. We're not naturally skeptical. We're naturally gullible. We naturally want to believe anything and everything. All patterns are real. They're all true. I believe them all.
Like patterns, arcane symbols and hidden codes seem to speak directly to the human brain. And when these paintings showed up in the library in Rome, They left little doubt that something terrible is coming. This burning tower bears a chilling similarity to the World Trade Center tragedy. It's part of the so-called Lost Book of Nostradamus, found in the National Library in Rome in 1986. At the time of the manuscript's discovery, no one realized its link to Michele Nostradamus or his son Cesare. An inscription in the book refers directly to them. All evidence suggests this is authentic. The illustrations seem to some readers to hint at the French Revolution, even Islamic terrorism. But Dr. Osvaldo Avalone, director of Rome's National Library, asserts this is all another elaborate hoax.
This manuscript is not by Nostradamus. It cannot be for temporal reasons. The expert's analysis has dated it from 1800. Nostradamus had already been dead for almost 300 years.
Any credence given to this book confirms Nostradamus' remarkable staying power. And even when predictions have been contradicted by solid proof, the power of prophecy can last for centuries.
Nostradamus very rarely pinned down dates to his predictions. And the one case where he did come up with a specific date was the seventh month of 1999. He predicted that a great king of terror would come down from the sky.
1999 has come and gone. But there are signs that the third king of terror may be among us right now. And that Nostradamus is warning us of even worse catastrophes to come. To those who believe in the coded messages of Nostradamus, the Antichrist is here, and he is living among us. There is no greater urgency than deciphering the prophecies to find him and save the world. Nostradamus names the year 1999 as the turning point toward the rule of evil.
The year 1999, seventh month. From the sky will come a great king of terror to bring back to life the great king of the Mongols, before and after Mars to reign by good luck.
Now, when he mentioned 1999, that got everyone excited. You don't want to do that in the prophecy business, otherwise you've got fewer possibilities for it coming true, you see. But 1999 was specifically mentioned.
It was uncharacteristic for Nostradamus to name a specific year, considering how vague he was for other dates. But this prediction may actually have corresponded to a specific celestial event, as astrology was a key element in Nostradamus's work.
In that quatrain, what he was saying, and the reason why he picked that date, was it coincided with a solar eclipse, and solar eclipses were considered predictors, omens of bad things. Now, he says July, the solar eclipse didn't happen until August 11th, but the end of July on the Julian calendar was about the middle of August in the Gregorian calendar. And the Gregorian calendar came into effect after his lifetime in the 1580s.
Some interpreters maintain that this 1999 arrival of the King of Terror is a modern-day prediction of the third Antichrist.
The Antichrist III very soon annihilated. 7 and 20 years of blood will his war last.
27 years his bloody war will last. The most important thing about the third Antichrist is that, unlike the other two, he's the first to fall in his war. I look at that and see Saddam Hussein then becoming a very important candidate. Saddam Hussein, when he became dictator, to the moment of his hanging, is exactly 27 years.
This is the 77th quatrain of the 8th century. The English translation is the Antichrist III very soon annihilated. 27 years his bloody war will last. Heretics dead,
captive, exiled. Blood, human bodies, reddened water will fall like hail on the earth. This is fairly straightforward. There's no particular way to interpret who this is or when it will happen.
Quatrain 62 from Century 2 has become the focus of major speculation that Nostradamus has directly named the third Antichrist.
The key to the third Antichrist, who's called Mavus, M-A-V-U-S, is how his name could be crunched into great leaders' names. M-A-V-U-S, backwards, becomes S-U-B-A-M. The B becomes a D, S-U-D-A-M, Saddam. It is a phonetic spelling of Saddam.
Do we allow the transposition of letters, or do we not allow the transposition of letters? Do you think we should? I think we shouldn't. And in science, there's always some kind of agreement about the rules. In Nostradamus studies, like so many things related to astrology and forecasting like that, there's no agreement. So there'll never be a settled decision about Nostradamus.
If Saddam Hussein was a candidate for the Antichrist, he did not live up to the advanced billing.
Personally, I would think that Mavis is a conjunction of Osama bin Laden and George Bush. Drop the H, drop the beginning of Osama, and you have Ma Bus.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Already, on the fringes of the Internet, Obama's name has been floated as another candidate for the Antichrist. Though the literal translation of the original does not support this.
In the United States, this 62nd quatrain of Century 2 is often interpreted as referring to the Antichrist. Michel said here, the best way to read this particular quatrain is to start at the end when he says the comet will come. And the comet was often seen as an omen of some event, but he doesn't see this as apocalyptic. Nostradamus was not a predictor of the end of the world.
The literal translation, the first word, which has no particular meaning for the French, Mabus, it could be a person's name. One of the editors of Nostradamus' work relates it to the town of Maubeuge, somebody originating from that town. That's a possible explanation.
No matter how it's interpreted, a sensational prophecy never loses its appeal.
In 1987, for example, it might have looked like the Ayatollah Khomeini. And then, just a few years later, when Khomeini died, suddenly it became Saddam Hussein. Very eligible for the position, of course, because he was the popular villain of the day. And that will change again and again and again.
With Nostradamus, doom and gloom is also telling people what they want to hear. They're fearful of the future. There's uncertainty. And so when you give the doom and gloom, it helps people interpret their feelings to understand why they're feeling this uncertainty, this anxiety.
Humans are the only animals with predictive abilities that can form mental models and try to imagine what might happen in the future. Animals generally respond to instincts, and humans have the advantage that we can anticipate what might lie ahead, just like someone playing a game of chess can do much better if they can anticipate a few moves ahead.
Doomsday prophecies are one way that a prophet can immediately gain notoriety. It's a negative event. It attracts a lot of attention. If it's happening during turbulent times, people want to believe. They want to understand. And so people will focus on those prophets and look at them, and they become the heroes for that day.
If we are in what Nostradamus called the times of trouble, an era of war, famine, and global collapse, then decoding his words just might save our lives. Some claim Nostradamus called the years 2009 through 2012 the times of trouble, a time of earthquakes, floods, famine, war, and economic decline.
he says that we have entered a time of evolutionary crisis, and if it doesn't change, there will be a great depopulation of the human race.
I think he was very definitely offering warning. He was trying to teach people in the future about how they ought to behave so that the lessons of the past would be learned and they could protect themselves from the mistakes that were made in the past. He actually believed the world could alter itself for the better. If we are truly living through the dark times he foresaw, perhaps his warnings can save us. In one disturbing quatrain, Nostradamus forecasts the rising ocean in the North Atlantic. Could this actually be Nostradamus' way of warning us about global warming?
The Great Britain, including England, will come to be flooded by very high water.
If we are on the precipice of a global collapse, which seems fairly likely due to global warming and collapse of financial communities and so forth, then we are looking at a tremendous famine.
The great famine that I sense approaching, often churning, then becoming universal, so great and so long that one will come to pull out roots from woods and babe from breast.
Famine was something that overshadowed the world of Nostradamus just like plague. The prophecy is chilling also because it is the beginning of these famines that he sensed approaching in various places, getting bigger and bigger until suddenly they are worldwide.
And interpreters see that Mother Nature is not the only source of troubled times. Could a major religious war engulf both East and West?
From Fez, the realm will reach those of Europe, their city ablaze, and the blade will cut. The great one of Asia, by land and sea, with a great troop, so that blues and purses, the cross, will pursue to death.
That's one of those quatrains that you can say, okay, it's about the Ottoman Empire pushing westward and persecuting Christians along the way. Or you can look a little bit into the future and say that, okay, if all this stuff in the Middle East turns out badly, then maybe there actually will be a Muslim invasion of the southern parts across North Africa, or even an atomic event, atomic terrorist event, that would say fall, you know, Rome. In several places, Nostradamus talks about how the folk will have to flee Rome and that Rome will be destroyed by a great fire.
Islam was a force that was to be reckoned with. At the time that Nostradamus was living, there was the threat to the eastern half, and Constantinople had fallen to Turks in 1453, and then the southern Turks were spreading through the Balkans, and ultimately there would be the siege of Vienna. So there was a tremendous interest in, fear of, nervousness about Islam and Christianity.
From Monaco to Sicily, the entire coast will be desolated. There will remain no suburb, city, or town not pillaged and robbed by the barbarians.
We're going to have terrible crises between the Islamic world and the Western world. Nostradamus wrote about it 500 years before, and he made it clear that that was what was coming.
Nostradamus himself saw time as cyclical and history as something that is endlessly repeated. He believed the cataclysms of his own time would come again, like the swing of a pendulum.
I think it's very, very naive to suddenly take something that was intelligible in the 16th century and sort of paste it onto the 21st century. I think it's very inflammatory, and it's actually pernicious to say that there is a conflict between Christians and Muslims in the contemporary world, comparing it to the conflict between Christian and Muslims in the 16th century.
A sinister interpretation can lead not only to irresponsible actions, but deadly ones. On March 20th, 1995, the Aum Shinrikyo cult launched the worst terrorist attack in Japan's history.
One of their sacred texts was an interpretation by their leader of Nostradamus' quatrains. And he picked out over 20 quatrains that related, in his opinion, directly to the Ocho Enriquillo. And part of that idea was the pestilence in the big city, and that inspired the sarin gas attacks on Tokyo subways. He thought by actually creating the reality that he saw in Nostradamus' quatrains, that he would bring on the end of the world.
The lethal gas killed 12 people and sickened more than 5,000 others.
This is why doomsday prophecy can be dangerous. Because let's say you predict the end of the world. What happens when the world doesn't end?
Everybody thinks that they live in the end of days. It's been happening since, in case of Judeo-Christian Western culture, since Jesus told his disciples, there are those of you standing here today who will see the end of days. You will see me come again.
The writings of Nostradamus seem to serve as corroborating evidence for what many Christian fundamentalists believe is the end times, described in the book of Revelation.
The Bible says that at the end of the age there'll be certain signs, wars, plagues, pestilences, famines, increase in interest in vegetarianism. So there are millions of Christians around the world that are sitting back and saying, well, we are in what the Bible calls the end of the age.
David Koresh in Waco. He also predicted the end times. He believed he was opening the seventh seal that would usher in the final days.
While the quatrains may not have given the specific date for Armageddon, Nostradamus' most important prediction for the future may actually lie not in his prophecies, but in his preface to the quatrains themselves. Though he lived five centuries ago, Nostradamus claimed he could see well into our future. For all his vague language, those predictions point to the end of the world.
One of his rare, powerful dated predictions says the world is going to end almost 1,800 years from now, when the sun in a final conflagration devours the earth, but Mars will continue its orbits in the year 3797.
The reference to the year 3797 is not coded in quatrains, but is mentioned in the preface of his book of prophecies, and its literal meaning is not a warning, but a confession.
Nostradamus was giving his prophecies. He said that they would be valid from the date he wrote this preface, which was 1555, until the year 3797. He couldn't see beyond that, but it doesn't mean that that's the end of the world. It just means that that's as far as he could see.
But 3797 could be a coded celestial reference, considering Nostradamus' frequent use of astrology and astronomy.
The volume of the sun's expansion is the same as Nostradamus' description, except an astronomer would say it's happening many billion years from now. In that same prophecy, he goes on to describe how the races of man will be living in Aquarius for some period of time, and others will be living in Cancer for time immemorial. It seems to me, describing a post-destruction of the world, that he's describing the human race colonizing worlds around the stars of Aquarius and Cancer.
Perhaps we will ultimately find a way to solve our problems. But as in the time of Nostradamus, disease, war, and religious strife are the headlines of today. It is the very timelessness of human suffering and uncertainty that keeps people looking to decode the quatrains that seem as relevant through the centuries as they are today.
His accuracy is certainly a key to his longevity, there's no doubt about that. There are enough quatrains that are so stunningly accurate, there's no surprise that people still turn to him. Particularly in times when things are going badly wrong, people will turn to Nostradamus.
It's our burden and pleasure to unlock the mysteries, because if these prophecies are about our times, we will solve the mystery.
I'm not convinced that Nostradamus was prophetic. If pronouncing that mankind is going to go on with wars is prophetic, then all right. But I've never been convinced that anything he saw ahead of time really came out the way he announced it would.
Modern science predicts that the world will indeed end someday, but places that time billions of years in the future.
Science and prophecy agree that the world will end. It's just a question of when.
So there's enough there for anybody to dig through for a long time to come. And they're obscure enough in the way that they're written that it allows us, as a ink blot test would, a Rorschach kind of you-tell-us-what-it-means process, that this will go on for another 500 years if we let it.
What may preserve his legacy most of all are the ordinary people eager to unlock the secrets of the future by decoding the writings of Nostradamus. Despite the best efforts of skeptics who doubt the quatrains carry the power of clairvoyance, coded or otherwise.
If we take Nostradamus as literature, then certainly people should. We want to encourage people to make their own interpretations. But making an interpretation and believing that Nostradamus was able to predict a specific event in our personal lives 450 years ago is, I think, a dubious proposition.
When the tomb of Nostradamus was desecrated during the French Revolution, local villagers enshrined what little they could recover of his remains in a church a short distance from where he died and offered this epitaph: "The most illustrious and unique Michel Nostradamus, in the view of all the mortals, whose near divine pen could describe future events the world over from the influence of the stars." People will believe what they want to believe for the reasons they want to believe it. For this reason, the burden of proof may be heavier on those who question the prophet than those who believe. Nobody can dispute that times of trouble are upon us. But the question remains, are there secrets still hidden in Nostradamus that can be decoded in time to help us?
Wow, wasn't that interesting? It was very interesting to me. That's one reason why I chose to actually have it broadcasted today. There you have it, the decoding of Nostradamus, when he predicted so many different things that for some strange reason seem to have occurred. And people really considering the fact that in the future there's a possibility that he might have, without the decoding, knowingly, can tell us what we have to avoid so we won't destroy the world. I was very interested in dealing with this particular presentation today, mainly because of the health sickness that we have going on in the world today. And nothing remotely indicated in this presentation about anything related to that whole scenario. But I found it extremely interesting that he predicted Hitler and predicted the killing of former President Kennedy and lived back in the 1500s. Wow, that's crazy. In any event, this has been Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Dean. I didn't know for sure that we would be able to conclude the show today, but just by happenstance, we were able to do that. Once again, our show will be aired on Monday. Today is Friday. We have another show on Monday. I haven't determined what it will be. And the reason why I haven't determined that is just that there's so many things that happen in the day that caused me to consider which way to turn, left, right, upside down, which way. But I know it will be something extremely interesting. And so have a, I think, nice weekend, because this is a holiday weekend for us. Each of you be careful of this health problem that we have. Make sure that you wash your hands and take care of yourself and your families. On Mondays at 5 o'clock, we will broadcast again. And until then, have a good day. This has been Getting It Done with your host, Dr. Walter Dean. Good day.